dena
with a strip of cloth,
batva
tying up,
tang
him,
asadukarinam,
the evil doer,
sasma sukesham,
leaving some of his mustache
and hair remaining.
Pravapan,
by shaving him,
Vyarupayat,
made him disfigured.
Tavat,
by then,
Mamadu,
they had crushed.
Para,
opposing.
Sanyam,
the army.
Adbhutam,
extraordinary.
Yadu Pravira,
the heroes of the Yadu dynasty.
Nalinim,
a lotus flower.
Tata,
S.
Gaja,
elephants.
Translation.
Lord Krishna tied up the evildoer with a strip of cloth. He then proceeded to disfigure Rukmi by comically shaving him, leaving parts of his mustache and hair. By that time, the Yadu heroes had crushed the extraordinary army of the opponents, just as elephants crush a lotus flower. Purport. Lord Krishna used his same sharp sword to give the wicked Rukmi a peculiar haircut. Read the next one.
Krishnantikam upavrajya dadrisus tatra rukminam tatabhutam mata prayam drisva sankashano vibhu vimucha badam karuno bhagavan krishna mahabravit.
As the Yadus approached Lord Krishna, they saw Rukmi in this sorry condition, practically dying of shame. When the all-powerful Lord Balaram saw Rukmi, he compassionately released him and spoke the following to Lord Krishna. Let's see how things have changed in the last few thousand years. When Krishna cut up Rukmi in this, giving him a peculiar haircut and shaving part of his mustache, part of his hair here and there, it was worse than death for him. It would have been better if Krishna killed him. Because for the Kshatriya, as Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita, for one who has been honored, his honor is worse than death. And to be treated like that is worse than death for Rukmi. But nowadays, people actually went for such haircut. They go for such haircut. And they think it's nice. They don't feel ashamed. Let's see how things have changed in the last 2,000 years. And they wear their peculiar hairstyle with pride. Going around, you know. It's amazing. Because I sometimes, in the Bhagavad Gita, I say that the difference between someone who is knowledge and someone who is ignorant. What is right for those in knowledge is considered wrong by those in ignorance, and vice versa. They do everything opposite. Someone who is not following Dharma, not following religious principles, they do everything opposite. It's just like, according to Vedic standard, if you go to the washroom, you wash your hand after. But some people, they wash their hand before, but they don't wash after. So things like that are going on. Everything is so topsy-turvy in this world now. We continue reading.
Asat vidam toya krishna kritam asmas jugupsitam vapanam svasukeshanam vairupyam suridovada.
Lord Balaram said, "My dear Krishna, you have acted improperly. This deed will bring shame on us, for to disfigure a close relative by shaving off his mustache and hair is as good as killing him." Purport. Omniscient Balaram knew that Rukmini was the guilty party, but to encourage the lamenting Rukmini, he decided to gently reproach Sri Krishna. And Krishna, Balaram here is trying to be the diplomat. He knows very well that Rukmini is wrong for trying to stop Krishna from taking Rukmini away, because after all, Rukmini has given her heart to Krishna. She wants to marry Krishna. And how did Rukmini has never met Krishna, but how did she know about Krishna that she decided to marry him? She just heard. She heard from Narada Muni the glories of Krishna, and she decided within her heart, I'm not going to marry anyone else but Krishna. Just by hearing. Just see the power of hearing. Although we see the deities every day, but person we have not met, really, like met Krishna face to face and talk to him, shake his hand like Lord Brahma did. But why are we serving him? Why are we making sacrifices, performing austerities to serve him? Getting up in the morning, for most people that's the best time to sleep. In fact, for some people that's the time when they go to sleep. And that's the time you get up to chant the name of someone with whom you're not really personally met. Because we heard. By hearing from the lips of the pure devotee the glories of the Krishna, we become attracted. The heart becomes naturally attracted. It is not some imposition on the soul, the attraction between the living entity and Krishna. It is the most natural thing to do. The attraction between the spirit soul and Krishna, that's the most natural thing, because that is the constitutional position of the living entity. It is as natural as the stream is flowing towards the ocean, naturally. That's why some devotees, they pray that, please let my consciousness flow towards you, just like the Ganges is flowing towards the ocean without any hindrance. That's our prayer. Just let my consciousness flow towards you, because that's the most natural thing to do. But when one is contaminated by the most material nature, it seems to be so unnatural. It seems so unnatural to serve Krishna. It seems so unnatural, all the things that we do. But why are we doing it? Because we heard, and we also have a taste. We got a glimpse of the taste of what it means to serve. Just like just now, those who participate in the kirtan, you can just look at one another's face. You don't find that face outside. You don't see this kind of face outside. You don't see this kind of face even on the airplane, although they try. They really try hard. Yes, sir, can I get you a drink? Can I get something else? Sometimes you wonder how they keep that up for so many hours. They probably have some pin up there and not hold it up. But the face of the devotees who participate in the kirtan just now, you can see it. It's just out of this world. It's blissful. It's so blissful. You see. And nobody dances like that. You see what Sean dances, huh? It's just completely like childlike. There's no reservation or anything. You just suddenly just feel like, this is what I want to do. I just want to let go and just dance. It's so nice, so blissful. So we do get a taste. And this is the power of Krishna consciousness. By hearing, and we try to put it into practice, immediately we get results. Sometimes you wonder, how can people follow these Mayavadis? They say, yeah, you just do this, at the end you will get it. We don't know what it is. I cannot tell you what it is, but you find out at the end. And you have to wait until the end. Can you imagine I tell you to go up to the tallest building? You just jump out of this window from the tallest building in Melbourne. You feel it. I cannot describe how it feels, but you will feel. Just come out and try it out. No person in his right mind will do that. But in terms of spiritual life, people are doing it all the time, every day. They follow some unscrupulous people and say, and they just do it with just a promise, which they cannot describe what it is. So in Krishna consciousness, nothing is less is left to the imagination. In fact, we tell you, don't imagine, don't try to imagine things, because you'll fall short. Whatever we try to imagine of how Krishna looks like, how it is like in the spiritual world, is going to fall way short of what it really is. Because all we can do is just try to impose our material understanding and experiences on the material world. And that's why sometimes we find devotees having trouble. Because they try to imagine how things like, they try to impose their material experiences into the spiritual. This is what I'm experiencing and this is how it should be in the spiritual world. But it's a completely different experience. So Krishna conscious, the process of Krishna consciousness is very powerful. That it's not just by hearing, you hear, you put in practice, you actually get projection. You get direct perception, you get direct realization. You get a taste of what is more to come. It's just an appetizer. It's just like that's why this movie company, they spend a lot of money on people to create a preview of the movie. They take some parts of the movie and then they show it in the preview. When people go to the movies, then they see the preview coming soon on the screen. People say, oh, I want to watch this. It's not the full thing, it's not the real thing, it's not the full thing, but it's just a little preview. And people feel, wow, I want to go and watch this movie when it comes out. So we get a taste of what it's like, what Krishna consciousness is about. We get a taste of it, experiencing it. Because basically what we're doing here is no different than what is going on in the spiritual world. It's singing, it's dancing. There's association of devotees, there's taking of prasadam, there's service, and plenty of services. There's no limit, there's no unemployment in the spiritual world. Plenty of services. But the attitude of the service is that is not that they think, oh, Krishna depends on me. If I don't clean, it's going to be dirty. We sing in the Brahma Samhita, Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahma Sevyanam Govindam Adi Purusham Tamahamajami. Lakshmi. People love to worship Lakshmi. Some people, they have a picture of Lakshmi near the entrance. Before they go to work, they leave the house. They often say, Om Lakshmi, Lakshmi, Om Lakshmi. And then, but Lakshmi is serving Krishna. Thousands and thousands of Lakshmi, they're just serving Krishna. They're cleaning. It's not that it's dirty in the spiritual. Even if it's dirt, it's chintamani. Yeah. It's not like this dirt that we have to clean. It's chintamani. See, they're cleaning. This is the attitude. That eagerness to serve. That understanding, I'm just serving of Krishna. So this is what we train to do. Train to become servant of Krishna. So let's read a few more.
May vasman sabhyasu yitha bratu vairupya chintaya sukha dukkha duna chanyosti yatta svakrita bhupuman.
Saintly lady, please do not be displeased with us out of anxiety for your brother's disfigurement. No one but oneself is responsible for one's joy and grief, for the man experiences the result of his own deeds.
Bandhu vadaha doshusti na bandhu vadam ahati tyajya senaiva doshina hattakim hanyate puna.
A relative should not be killed, even if his wrongdoing warrants capital punishment. Rather, he should be thrown out of the family. Since he has already been killed by his own sin, why kill him again?
Prabhupada.
To further encourage Lady Rukmini, Balaram again emphasizes that Krishna should not humiliate Rukmini. Kshatriyanam yam dama prajapati vinirmita bhat bratavi brataram hanyat yena goratamastata. Turning to Rukmini, Balaram continued, the code of sacred duty for warriors established by Lord Brahma enjoins that one may have to kill even his own brother. That is indeed a most dreadful law. Purport. Lord Balaram, in the interest of fairness, is giving a complete analysis of the situation. Although one should not kill a relative, there are extenuating circumstances according to military codes. In the American Civil War, which took place in the 1860s, many families were divided between the army of the North and that of the South, and thus fratricidal killing unfortunately became a common affair. Such killing is certainly goratama, most dreadful, yet such is the nature of the material world, where duty, honor, and so-called justice often create conflict. Only on the spiritual platform in pure Krishna consciousness can we transcend the unacceptable pain of material existence. Rukmi was maddened by pride and envy, and thus could not understand anything about Krishna or Krishna consciousness. So again, continuing Balaram, being the perfect diplomat, trying to present the different side of the same story. That on one hand, one should not kill the relative, even if he has performed the most abominable act. But on the other hand, in terms of military codes, one is allowed to do that. So this is this kind of duality we find, we face with all the time in the material world. In fact, we have Prabhupada gave the example of the North and South during the Civil War in America. But in fact, during the Mahabharata War, for the Dronacharya, the Pandavas were his favorite students. And Bhishma Dev, the Pandavas were his favorite grandsons. Yet, because he was on the other side, on the side of the Kuru, he had to fight with them. It's not something he would love to do, but out of duty, he had to fight the Pandavas. And the Pandavas has to kill them, be involved in killing them. Yudhishthira was teacher, Yudhishthira was grandfather. Of course, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, we find Arjuna was reluctant to do that. Sometimes we wonder, like, what's wrong, Arjuna? You know, Krishna is standing before him, giving him instruction. Why does he have any doubts? It's so clear cut. Krishna tell you do it, just do. It's not as simple as that. But one can at least empathize with Arjuna's position. They didn't want to fight. Yudhishthira and his brothers, they didn't want to fight. And Yudhishthira, in fact, he asked, just give us 3-5 villages to rule. Forget about the war, forget about the kingdom. Just give us 5 villages. But Duryodhana said, no, I will not give you land even that exists even on the tip of a pin. He wants you wiped out of the face of this world. There's no choice, I have to fight. And still, Arjuna said, why do I have to fight? I don't want to fight this battle. Let me just go to the forest. So how often we find ourselves faced with situations, like maybe not killing our brother or sisters or anything, but situations where we do not want to be in, but somehow we are forced to be. Therefore, Prabhupada, in what Prabhupada said, actually for the spirit soul to be covered by this material body or to be engaged in material entanglement is very embarrassing. In fact, for the spirit soul to be in this material is a very embarrassing situation. You're forced to do things that are unnatural to the soul. Remember, we were reading that even in Yugoslavia, for example, Bosnia. So much atrocity was performed there. When they come in, the Serbs were coming, and previously they were neighbors. They were living peacefully. And then suddenly someone just kind of cook up something, some hatred, religious hatred. They start killing one another. And the Serbs were coming the whole Muslim villages. And sometimes they will rape the women in front of the husband. There's nothing they can do about it. They force the son to shoot the father, force the father to shoot the son. This is a material world. How are you going to avoid all these things? And it's part of the karma, like it was previously stated here. No one but oneself is responsible for one's joy and grief, for a man's experience, the results of his own deeds. But of course, out of sentiment, we may say, oh, why? People have so many questions of why. Why this thing happened? Why that thing happened? There cannot be a God because He allowed these things to happen. Or if there's a God, He cannot be a good God. How can He allow children to suffer like that? But people do not understand this nature of material world. It's very stringent. It is not... So I think Sri Bhaktisiddhanta, he said this material world is not a place for gentlemen. It's not a place for gentlemen. It's a place where you come in, just do whatever business you have to do and get out as quick as possible. It's just like you look sometimes in the public lavatory. Gentlemen don't go and hang around there. If they have to go, they go and do the business quickly and get up. But who are the people who hang around? Drunkards, drug addicts. They hang around these places like that. So it's not a place for gentlemen. It's material world. But the problem is that as soon as you get entangled in the most of material nature, we get implicated in the whole running of the most of material nature. And one get implicated one way and then get more implicated and more implicated and more implicated. It's very stringent and it's very entangling. We have find sometimes children, they eat this, what they call this, sugar cones. What they call this? They're like, huh? Pardon? Candy floss. And sometimes they just eat and then they see their whole face smeared. And then they try to wipe their face and they spread out even more. And then they do here, they do there, and then they start out with just a little bit of here and they try to clean it up, it just make it worse. And then before you know it, the whole body becomes all messed up. Well, there you go. The material is like that. You fix one problem, you create more problems. That's why Prabhupada said, material progress means one step forward, 10 steps backwards. We were just discussing that in the home program on Thursday. How material advancement, like motor car. You create motor cars. It's very nice. Very convenient. Zoom from one place to the other. But what do you need from motor car? You need gasoline, petrol. And then you have to dig from the ground, this gasoline, and create vacuums in the earth. And that create a movement of the plates or whatever they call it. And that create earthquakes. They create volcano. They create tsunami. They create cyclones, tornadoes. And they create greenhouse effect. Emission of gas. Now you can just go on and on, just from just one motor car, how much negative things it creates. Just for one convenience. That's material progress. When they try to fix material problem with material solution, it just makes things worse. So, as long as we're in the material world, all this will be faced with this kind of problem. Sometimes choices that we do not want to make, but we are forced to make those choices. But those choices it's not really choices. People are very attached to their freedom. Sometimes you preach that to some people may be coming to Krishna consciousness, they may be attracted, but they say, but I'm attached to my freedom. Isn't that a classic one? People say, I'm attached, I want to maintain my freedom, therefore I do not want to surrender completely to Krishna. I don't want to accept a guru, because then I have no freedom. I have to do what the guru says.
Yeah.
Oh, very scary. But examine it. What is that freedom? The freedom to take birth, repeated birth and death. The freedom to die of old age. The freedom of diseases. The freedom of threefold miseries. The freedom to experience hunger and thirst. Fear, lamentations, a little bit of happiness. What is that freedom? It's such an illusion for the living entity to think and be so attached to the so-called freedom. Because the freedom given to us is so minute, so limited. It's like a prisoner in a jail of maybe 3 times 6 feet or whatever it is. I'm free. I can sit down. I can stand up. I can squat. I can lie down. And walk up and down the cell. And crossway. I can push up. Pull up. It's free. But does someone really consider this freedom? If you know that there's so much more. So because the living entity did not really know, there's so much more to be experienced. We become attached to this insignificant freedom, or with something which is called freedom. And they do not realize that at every moment of their life they've been controlled. Look here! Oh, smell this, hear this, taste that, touch this and touch that. Completely controlled by the senses and the mind. But they say, I'm free. You, Hare Krishna, are not free. You cannot do this, you cannot do that. That's not true. You say you're vegetarian, you're not allowed to, you cannot eat meat. I said we can. But we choose not to. But you cannot give it up. You're controlled by it. Yeah, we don't smoke, that's right. But we can smoke if we want to. But you cannot give up smoking. You cannot give up drinking. All the vices they have, you cannot give it up. Who is free? The devotees are free, or you are free? You are controlled by all these substances. You are controlled by the way of this, your way of life. But devotees have also tried that. But we have made a choice. We use our proper use of our independence and make a choice. I'm not going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to give this up. So who is more, who is stronger? Who has freedom? The freedom is the freedom to choose, to make real choices in life. No, I have a choice. I can choose this job or that job. Actually, you know what job means? J-O-B, just over broke. So, it's interesting, since sometimes people they just throw different things at you and we don't know. And they don't know what they're talking about. People don't really analyze. It used to be one record that one devotee make. You probably remember the record, the oldies, Change of Heart. Stop and Think. Remember that song? Anyone else heard that song? It's from this record, Change of Heart. Stop and Think. You're running around so much, but stop and think. Think about it. Think about the things you attach. Is it really giving you happiness or not? Why be attached to, there are people attached to something that actually causes suffering, and they don't think about it. Because they've been propelled by the idea of happiness. Not so much by what they're doing, whether it's bringing happiness or not, but just by the idea of happiness. So in this way, they just become implicated in the material world. And continue life after life after life after life. It's a very, very sorry state of affair. And because they're maddened by pride and envy, they cannot understand anything about Krishna or Krishna consciousness. Completely covered. Too much pride. They will not take shelter. They say, I'll figure out myself. I do it my way. You know? People are proud of that. That song really symbolizes the material world. So it doesn't matter, you know, I fail, I this, I knock my head, blah, 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 blah. But I do it my way. So too much pride. And with too much pride, you cannot surrender to Krishna. Cannot surrender to the Vaishnava. Cannot surrender to the Guru. Because it requires humility, submissiveness. And yesterday we are celebrating the Vyasa Puja of Prahlada Nanda Maharaj. Just a small, very, very small gathering. And we were discussing about this point about Guru. And I was saying that very often we hear about the, often asking about qualifications of spiritual master. What are the qualifications of Guru? But less often asked is that what are the qualifications of a disciple? Because Prabhupada said both has to be potent. Right? He gave the example, it's just like he said, if the husband is potent and the wife is fertile, by the association there will be a child. So similarly, it's not, you may have a very potent or powerful guru, a pure devotee of the Lord, but if the disciple does not have the quality, proper submissiveness, Krishna consciousness will not be produced. You can pour, the tap water may be pouring out, but if the receptacle has holes in it, it will just go right through. We receive good instruction one side and then go out this other, the other side. And then what's the use? So both has to be there. The spiritual master has to be bona fide, the disciple also has to be bona fide. And some of these qualities are mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, Tatvidhi Pranipadina, Pariprasana Sevaya, Upadeshanti Te Gyanam Gyanina Sarvadashina. One should approach a spiritual master. In fact, in the Bhagavatam is described, it's not just one should, it's a one must. It's not an option. It is not like a luxury to have a spiritual master. Or it's not, then definitely not a fashion. I got a guru too. You got a name? Oh, I got a name too. You know? I got a Sanskrit name. It's not a fashion, it is a must. It's a necessity to accept a guru. And one should approach him submissively, inquire from him submissively, render service. And so, some of these qualities are also further described in the Bhagavatam in relationship to Narada Muni in his previous birth. When he was serving the Bhagavatas, Mahabhagavatas, it was described he was very, he has control of the senses, control of the mind, very obedient. So there are some of the qualities the disciple has, especially the submissive. And sometimes you wonder, Prabhupada used very often this word, submissive oral reception. You ever come across that term that Prabhupada used? Submissive oral reception. He used that very often. It's not just about hearing, but submissively hearing. That means you hear, you accept what you hear. You contemplate on what you hear and you try to apply, understand and apply what you hear. Submissive oral reception. Not just hear and then, yeah, very nice, very nice. Very nice class, Prabhu. And then walk out the door and forget everything. So submissive oral reception. So this submissiveness cannot be overemphasized, but to actually really want to develop our Krishna consciousness. The submissiveness towards the spiritual master has to be there in order to properly receive the gift that he has to give. Sometimes, the classic one is that devotee, I think I mentioned before, like devotees go, approach the spiritual master, say, my dear spiritual master, Sadhu very submissive, my dear Guru Maharaj, I want to get some instruction from you what I should do. In fact, I already done it. But is it all right? Can you please give your blessing? That's not submissiveness. You ask before you do. He doesn't give the guru much choice. You know, he said, I've already done it. And he will say, you nonsense rascal! And if you say that, you may just go away. And the guru says, no choice. Said, yeah, it's alright. Just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Another one, I remember one of my godbrother, he had a child, newborn child, and he approached the spiritual master and asked, my dear Guru Maharaj, can you please give a name to my newborn child? Actually, we have chosen this name. Do you think it's alright? What can I say? Yeah, it's alright. You get the idea? You get the drift of it? So, and there was another instance that was really a classic one. 2 years ago, someone improperly got involved with another. Mataji was actually someone's wife. And they wanted to become, to be together. And then they went and asked for blessing from the spiritual master to please bless our. And the spiritual master said, what am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to do? My hands are tied. They already done it. If before they do it, I would have said no. But they already done it. What are you going to do? Tell them no. Should not, they're going to go and do it anyway. So, we have to understand that accepting a spiritual master is not something cheap. It is a very, very serious relationship. Whereby you are accepting a spiritual master to guide us. We come to the realization, my independence is not getting me anywhere in life. Look what has it done to me. My independence, repeat the birth and death. I'm suffering this material world, and there's no end to it. And that's why we realize that we need help. Therefore we approach a spiritual master, please. Just like Arjuna. First he was giving so many arguments. I'm not going to do this because of this reason and that reason. So in the end he realized that it's not getting me anyway. So he approached Krishna. Please instruct me. Please tell me what to do. I'm confused about my duty. And then Krishna started instructing him. And by hearing submissively the instruction of Krishna in the end, what happened? He said, now I'm free from all doubts. He had no doubts, and he fight. He started out with so many doubts. How can I kill my grandfather? How can I kill my teacher? People whom I'm supposed to honor and respect. And the aim of Bhagavad Gita, he had no problem with that. All this duality just dissolved. So when we come to the platform of Krishna consciousness, by following the instruction of the spiritual master, all these dualities that we face dissolve. One become very clear. What is to be done, what is not to be done. What needs to do, what one needs to do to serve and please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if you too much pride, that will prevent us from taking that step. Pride and envy. So it's very important quality. In fact, if someone is very attached to the intelligence, very attached to the idea that I'm so knowledgeable, then they should test their knowledge to what Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita. What are the symptoms of someone who is knowledge? And what are the two items that he mentioned? Anyone know? Humility, pridelessness. These are the two first items that he mentioned, the list of items, the symptoms of someone who is knowledge. And why do you mention twice? Humility means pridelessness. Yes, I mean pretty similar. But he mentioned times, humility, pride, free from pride. So important qualities in spiritual life. And we're not talking about false humility. Not the kind of humility that we walk around and say, touch me, you know. But the humility to be able to accept instruction. The humility to consider ourselves, I'm just a servant, let me just serve. Let me just serve the Vaishnava, serve the Guru, serve Krishna. That kind of humility. That submissiveness is something that has to be cultivated. Because due to contamination from the material world with so much false ego, that false ego is just preventing us from surrendering. And sometimes we ask to do something like, and our false ego just jumping out through the nine gates of the body. But then we have to consider, what am I doing? What is my life worth? I'm not doing something useful. If I'm not doing something to please my guru, well, if not every moment, at least every day. If every day we're not just doing something wonderful to serve my guru. And what is something wonderful? Does it just mean that you do something completely far out? Went and do and make 10 devotees or whatever? No. What is wonderful is also what we just doing our daily service. Daily we chanting our rounds, making some endeavors to chant our rounds nicely. Daily going to the program. Daily doing our service, whatever service may be. That's very, very pleasing. That's stating us. Not just something like I just have to go and do something far out. Some people try to get the attention of the spiritual master by when the spiritual master around, I'm here. You know, always standing in front. And one time someone was asking Sri Bhakti Siddhanta, who is your dearest disciple? And there were so many senior disciples and sannyasis in the room. And each one was thinking like, oh, he's going to point at me. Sri Bhakti Siddhanta just look around. And look out and say, you see that devotee out there in the courtyard, cleaning the courtyard? He's my dearest disciple. He's very dear. Very humbly, just doing service. But he's also just also to prick on the pride of some of his disciples. So even though one may not be doing big service, he may not be a big devotee, but it doesn't matter. That's not the main qualification for going back and back to Godhead. It's not that you have to be a GBC in order to go back and back to Godhead, or temple president, or this president, that president, or this manager, or this big title. Title is not going to bring us back and back to Godhead. What will bring us back to Godhead is that we just humbly serve the instruction of the spiritual master, purify ourselves, and become Krishna conscious. So everyone has this opportunity. You don't need a position to surrender to Krishna. You only just clean the floor, you can go back and back to Godhead. Any service that we have, that we perform, that is the most important service in the world. Because that's what is the most important service. Whatever service we have, that is the most important service in the whole world. Sometimes people think, I'm just doing this menial service. Look at all the Sankirtan devotees, they're getting all the glorification. Every day they're reading their scores. I'm just doing service, nobody will notice me. I want to give my service and be someone glorified. So you're doing this to please Krishna, or you're doing it to be glorified? You're doing it to please yourself, or you're doing it to please Guru and Krishna? So we ask ourselves this question. So Krishna consciousness actually is very much an internal process. It's not just something external. It's something very an internal process where we not constant, but at least regularly update our data inside and ask, what am I doing here? What is my motivation? How am I improved? So we should be constantly asking ourselves and how we can increase our service, improve our service, increase our surrender. These are plans. If we don't make plans like that for Krishna, we'll be making plans for something else. So this is how we conquer the dualities of the material world. Very simple. For someone who is surrendered to the spiritual master, it's very easy to conquer the dualities of the material world. There's no confusion. Because you know very clearly what to do. The instructions are there. And we just take the instruction to our heart and then just try to apply it. And try to become first class. Prabhupada said the three classes of servant. Third class servant, you never do what he's told to do. He always want to do something else. He always have his own idea of what to do. So second class means this guru said do this and they do. They're very good at following instruction. They just do what they are told to do. A first class, they do before the masters tell them what to do. That's first class. They already anticipated what the guru wants and they do it before it's even been asked. So remember, the first time you heard that, everyone was scrambling, trying to first serve the guru and trying to, and they created a big mess. So you don't try to jump to become first class. At least try to be a second class servant. And by being properly trained up as a second class servant, we can move on, become a first class. And then we learn, we are trained to know what Krishna wants, or what guru wants. By doing it over a period of time, we know, okay, this is how he wants things done. This is how Krishna wants things done. We can anticipate. And just like the servants of Prabhupada, they anticipate by being with Prabhupada for a while, they anticipated what he wants and how he wants things done. And one servant was telling how when Prabhupada come out from the bath, and then he fold the dhoti in such a way, that when Prabhupada just leave it out, the dhoti just flow out nicely, then he can put it on very easily. And the tilak, as he walk out, the tilak just right where it is, and with the mirror and the water, and he just put on his tilak. And he put on chada, put on kuta. And when he go for his morning walk, he walk, as he walking, the servant put on the chada, the shoes, and the cane, without Prabhupada breaking his stride. Just flowing, and everything just appeared. That's anticipating. But that is after a period of observing how Prabhupada do things. And by meditating on how he do things and how he can improve his service, that disciple was able to do it very nicely. Facilitating the spiritual master's service. Making his needs, whatever physical needs is taken care of very nicely, so he can continue with preaching and translation of the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's first class service. This way the disciple has no thoughts in mind except on how I'm going to serve my spiritual master. How can I do things, my service better? How can I improve? So if we get into that kind of meditation, where is room for meditating or anything else? Our consciousness and mind can be completely filled up with the service attitude. There's no room for anything else. There's no room for prajapa. There's no room for planning for sense gratification. There's no room for complaining. It's only when we're not fully absorbed, we think, oh, he said this to me, I'm completely disturbed. I cannot do service today. We had a deal with one situation across way yesterday. Someone did something and that devotee was completely upset. He just sat in the room for a long time. He could not do his service. He was so disturbed in his mind. And I told him, I said, look, it's very situation is very simple. You may be right. You may be damn right. You may have a reason also to be upset. But what is the conclusion of that? You are not doing a service. So is that favorable for your devotional service or unfavorable for your devotional service? They're unfavorable. It stops you from doing service. I say if it's unfavorable, then forget about it. Let it go. Because that reaction to what happened is causing you not to do your service. You may have a reason for it. You may be right. But what good does it do? This was once someone to make a statement. You may be right, but everyone is upset. It was the use of you being right. And I think it was Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. He mentioned that once he was he came to that stark realization. Because Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he was always full on from the time, you know, he was joining movement, he was really full on chanting at least 25 rounds a day, and hardly sleeping only a few hours. It was going on, you know. And he was pushing the devotees really hard. Then he came to Mayapur. And then he found out that the devotees all didn't want to work with him anymore. And that was very heavy for him. You know, because he was always thinking just to serve Prabhupada, I just want to do as much as possible. And he will not eat until he's done at least a set of books. Sometimes he won't eat the whole day until evening time. He was so determined to distribute Prabhupada's books. But nobody was able to keep up with him. And the other devotees just say, oh, it's too much. It cannot be around him. It's too intense. And then he realized, the preaching Sri Chumasa is not just only me, you know. There are also other devotees around. So we have to learn sometimes what the bottom lines are. Some of the bottom lines in devotional service are. Understand a few important facts. Krishna is a supreme enjoyer. I am not. Krishna is a supreme controller. I don't control anything. I can't control anything. And it's very, very, our devotional life is very simple. If we look at things in terms of, is it favorable for my devotional service or is it not favorable for my devotional service? It can be as simple as that. Forget about our self-righteousness. Forget about this, that, so many things. Is it good for my devotional life or is it not good for my devotional life? Is this going to help me make advancement in spiritual life or is it not? Or is it going to block my advancement? And it can be as simple as that. So Krishna consciousness can be very simple or can be very complicated. You can scratch your nose this way or you can try to scratch it this way. You know? Simple, very simple. Don't have to be complicated. Thank you very much. Any comments? Bhakta Prabhu, any comments? Bhakti? Questions? Alright. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.